Hello, Baggies fans, and welcome back to the latest episode of Baggies Broadcast here at the Express and Star, brought to you in association with That Man, the Kettle and Toaster Man. My name is Johnny Drury. As always, I'm alongside Albion correspondent Mr. Lewis Cox as we look back on the last seven or so days down at the Albion, reflect on that disappointing defeat to Leicester City. And we'll look ahead to the final two games of the campaign. Coxie, how are you, mate? Have you missed me? You were riding solo at the King Power on Saturday.
More to the point, how are you, Tin Man? The WD-40 all over the joints, is it? I'm sure I speak on behalf of all of our listeners when say, you know, how impressed we are with you and your fine achievements. I know you were telling me before we went on air just now that it's a little bit of a struggle at the moment, mostly down to the old back. But as I said to you earlier, I mean, that's your fault for wanting to run 26 miles, I guess.
It's definitely my own fault, yeah.
Like occupational hazard, I think. No, honestly, fair play. Well done. Yeah, I mean, I would say, not to make you feel bad or anything, you only missed probably Albion's best performance of the season. But at least in your favour, they lost. So you missed a defeat, I suppose.
Yeah, I missed the defeat. I was down running the London Marathon in the capital on Sunday. And yes, I am moving very gingerly. It took me probably about 10 minutes this morning to make a cup of tea. I've probably got the back of a 95-year-old, the thighs of a 75-year-old at the moment. So I'm not moving too well. But yeah, got there in the end and raised some good money for charity with the help of some Baggies fans. 5 hours 52 I did it in, so I was 15 minutes slower than my last effort, or was it, yeah, about 14 minutes slower. But yeah, just to get there in one piece was pretty good. I would say one piece, but I looked like a broken man by the end of it. But yeah, as I said, I had some fantastic support from you Baggies fans, even on the race day as well. I was looking at my Just Giving page and even Baggies fans were donating then, so massive thanks to you all. And I did have a few baggy shouts on the way round. As some avid listeners to the podcast will know, I was sponsored by our very own kit man, Pat Frost, ex-Albion kit man, England kit man, and an Albion nut, season ticket holder, Pat Frost, who was an absolute legend. So I had Boing Boing in massive letters on the back of my shirt. Got a few Albion shouts. Got some guy running past me saying, "You're an Albion fan, mate. I'm a Wolves fan." So I politely fired some obscenities his way, all in good taste.
No,
he's a bit too quick for me, to be honest. And then I also saw some guy on the side of the road waving a massive Leicester flag. So as I slowly ambled past him, I just pointed at his flag and pointed at him and said, "You were very, very lucky yesterday." So yeah, a little bit of football banter. But I was Leicester anyway. Let's start on the two serious notes. Now, Albion fans will know of your sort of long running bantering with Andy Johnson. And I know he sort of, when he comes for you, when I'm there, I've sort of voice of reason, don't rise to him, Coxie, you know, don't rise to him. Yeah. That's what he wants. How did you get on at the weekend? You know, I didn't have me chaperoning you, did you? So how did you deal with it?
We were civil. you know, you could see I was working hard doing the job of two men. Yeah. As you so often have had to in recent months. And he just, to be honest, it was probably more to do with the massive buffet spread of the tastiest fry up. Sorry, you don't want to hear this, but the tastiest fry up that you've ever tasted available, full with sides of all the pastries in the world, pick and mix bags for sweets. It was quite the spread. So we're probably both indulging too much to exchange any words, basically. But it was fine. I was okay without my personal security around me. I did all right. And a great ground to go to. I'd never been before, and I was really looking forward to it. And 31,000 there, and the atmosphere was cracking, to be fair. I mean, the away end was class. The Baggies fans were loud throughout, before game, after. I saw a lot of stuff online sort of suggesting, you know, this is how it needs to be, atmosphere wise, for as often as we possibly can. I realize, you know, it's a different context going to a game like that against a big hitter, but it was cracking atmosphere, to be fair. crazy. As you'll have seen following the stuff, Johnny, and watching it. Did you watch it on the telly? I presume you did.
I didn't. Do you know what? We'll come on to this, but I listened to probably about the first 15 minutes on TalkSport because I was on the train. And I was pottering around London at the time, so I didn't, but I was.
Right, it was a crazy, crazy game. I mean, anyone that was there or watched it will vouch. It was strange, strange. And we'll get onto it, but I was wondering before we came on, I was trying to think if I've seen Albion play too much better than that this season, but where? I could think of maybe a couple, two, three possibles, but I think that was right up there when you consider what they were doing against a squad like Leicester. But yeah, no, it was an eventful one. Disappointing finale, obviously, but yeah, great ground and facilities. And I was all right in the press room, Johnny, don't worry.
Good man, good man. My second question was about the food, which I'm not too jealous about because I'm sure there were some Albion fans running the marathon, so they'll know this. And there was obviously people listening who've probably done it before. Once you run it, you can eat what you want. I haven't stopped eating since Sunday evening. So I can't be too jealous of a Leicester fryer. But let's get into the nuts and bolts of the game.
Don't worry, Johnny. It's Leicester away in the Premier League next season.
Yeah, hopefully, mate. Hopefully, yeah. It's a positive spin to put on it. But yeah, let's get into the nuts and bolts of the game. You asked there if I watched it. I listened to the first 10 minutes. And I heard Albion battering Leicester.
By which point it should have been 3-0.
Yeah, and as soon as I got off the phone, as soon as I put my phone down from my ear, I immediately turned to my dad and I basically said, we'll probably get beat now. I've watched West Brom for far too long to know that you'll get burned if you don't take your chances, certainly against the big boys. That's how it proves, Coxie, but just a strange old game from what I can decipher from it.
Yeah, I mean, you're not alone there. I mean, we sort of all said that in the press box, really, in terms of, yeah, I think Okoye's miss inside 2 minutes is probably a bit forgotten about. Yes, it's, you know, not his natural kind of game to be free in the box and tucking a finish away. But then obviously Mikey Johnson has his sort of hat trick of chances inside 20 minutes. But you just knew after that flurry that he just thought, and I think I probably put it out on social media, I think Albion are probably going to rue this, probably going to be punished. What, barely 5 minutes later, Ndidi's tucking in Leicester's first chance of the game. And you're kind of thinking, oh, I think the last 10, 15 of the first half was a little calmer, a little quieter. And the hosts kind of finally worked out how to manage Albion. But the start of the second half was absolutely mental. And how on earth some of those moments didn't cross the line. I haven't seen anything like it, to be honest. But again, when they didn't, you knew what was coming. Leicester are going to get another moment and they'll probably score it. And obviously it would be Vardy. And yeah, I mean, at 2-0 there, you've seen all those chances go. You kind of think, well, maybe Albion will continue to create, but the ball's just not going in down the other end today. And Leicester have effectively scored two from two chances here. It's a bit of a lesson in ruthlessness, wasn't it, and wastefulness. But I suppose credit Albion, they kept going and kept dominating, really, and kept creating. And Jed Wallace probably scored one of the most toughest, you know, more difficult chances of the afternoon. And
some pass from Kipra, wasn't it?
Oh, what a ball. I'm absolutely unbelievable. If Kevin De Bruyne or Foden or Alexander-Arnold play that, I mean, it's like, you know, assist of the season. Unbelievable from the centre-half. But ultimately, you kind of hoped that about 15 minutes left after that, he'd set up a bit of a grandstand finish, you know. It just didn't arrive. That's when the chances sort of dried up, really. Balls into the box and stuff. But Leicester did see the last 10 minutes or so out pretty well and stoppages. Though I did write, and I said to a couple of people, it's all being well. You sort of want that one final chance being created for an equaliser, but the way Albion's day went, they probably needed about a dozen more chances to score that one more goal.
Yeah.
So yeah, wasn't meant to be, but I mean, how can one player clear it off the line three times in a game? I'm just not having that. That's just that one hat trick that shouldn't be allowed to exist. You know, and I know there's a lot of, well, Hamza Chowdhury shouldn't have been on the pitch at the time. You know, I haven't really seen his challenges back, but I mean, in terms of positioning, unbelievable. You know, defending, but probably fortune as well for the hosts, really. But then, you know, maybe Albin should have done more to ensure he couldn't have cleared at least a couple of them off the line. And then the woodwork and Dean Garner not being able to turn in when the crossbar came back down to him, and Then Dean Garner slid one wide that he really should have hit the target with, and Furlong's one went inches wide. It was just painful, to be honest.
Yeah, it's one of them you can kind of see it coming. I haven't sort of watched the game fully, Coxie, but a lot of comments I was getting from Albion fans were questioning the performance of the referee. And you mentioned there some people saying that Chaudhry maybe shouldn't have been on the field to clear some of them chances. What did you make of the referee's performance, and is criticism of it sort of valid?
Yeah, he sort of blew it sometimes where you kind of think, not sure about that. And then some were let go that he probably could have been a bit harsher on. I mean, Chaudhry's that kind of player, isn't he? He's kind of all physical or challenges, bustling kind of player. Again, I'd have to see some back, but I think he was done for a good handful of fouls. So I can't remember if he got booked at all in the end. I think he did, but whether it was late on in the game, I can't quite remember. But yeah, the sort of volume of challenges, there's probably a case, to be honest, against him. The one that really set everyone off was kind of midway through the second half or something, I think. Was it on Furlong? Basically, an Albion player was absolutely hacked, wasn't he? Like, booted up in the air base, on the edge of Leicester's box. Wasn't quite a penalty, but he wasn't far off, inches outside the line. And it was kind of down our end where the press box was, and referee Thomas Bramall, wasn't it, just looked at it, clearly didn't know what to do or what to give, looked at it for a couple of seconds and then just pointed the other way for a Leicester free kick. And it was so bad. It's one of the worst decisions I've seen. Just drew laughter from everyone around. And that would have irritated everyone watching the game from an Albion persuasion, clearly. Just wasn't a great performance. I mean, I did ask Carlos Corbran about it, more importantly, after the game, but Carlos was pretty sort of straight batted it, really. He's pretty professional over it. Didn't have many complaints about it, to be fair. Just reiterated.
He didn't question who the referee supported, did he? Like some sort of.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't think the ref was a. Yeah.
You think he was a Leicester fan?
No. But he sort of says, I know how tough the job is they have to do and the pressure's on them. And yeah, he wouldn't be drawn into it. He's had a couple of issues with yellow and red cards of his own, hasn't he, this season, Corbran? So maybe he's trying to be a little bit more responsible with some answers or anything like that. I don't know. He just probably didn't want to be drawn onto it. He didn't volunteer anything about the officials I asked and didn't fancy getting stuck in, which is fair enough. But it was a ropey official performance, I think we can say, officiating performance. And the Chaudhry point, I suppose, is a fair one. Yeah, it's the same as a striker scoring a hat-trick, isn't it? Should he have been on the pitch to score the hat-trick? Well, yeah. So I do think, and again, we can get onto this, but it was an excellent performance from Albion. It was. When you take into context the calibre of the opposition, but they still only had themselves to blame.
Yeah.
For not taking at least a point from it or the win they deserve from it. They still only had themselves to blame. And yes, back-to-back defeats at the wrong time of the season, but I couldn't leave the King Power with much more than encouragement, really, after watching them play like that. However, there'll be some listening to this, so they'll say, well, it's all well and good raising your game, away to top of the league and the big surroundings, but let's see such a performance next week at Hillsborough and then on the final day. So yeah, but those levels are hard to maintain, aren't they? The curious thing about Saturday was the volume of chances. It was 18 shots. We all know, everyone listening to this, that, and I've written this a few times, like, this isn't a high scoring free scoring Albion side, is it, that score tons of goals or even create tons of chances every game? Often minimal, and Albion often have to take the one or two clear chances they do create. So they are clinical in a way, but this kind of sheer volume of opportunities was just strange because we just haven't really seen it. So that was a bit mind-boggling amongst everything else. The performances I could sort of think to relate it to were maybe Preston away all those months ago, and then maybe the home win over Ipswich, and potentially I remembered the one against Leeds, but that was a bit backs to the wall, wasn't it, Leeds after Christmas? I remember Ipswich being deservedly beaten at the Hawthorns, but And Preston was rated so highly because they had that record at Deedard, didn't they? Before Albion went there. But yeah, I mean, Leicester squad, let's have it right, are a different caliber to Preston. So, albeit, look, Albion were beaten, so maybe we mustn't get too carried away with Saturday because Albion lost. But yeah, they played very well.
What was it? What was that down to, Coxie? Was it the fact of Leicester being surprised how front-footed Albion came out in that first half, or was Leicester off the pace? What could you put it down to the naked eye? You know, why were Albion so dominant?
And Enzo Maresca did note in his presser afterwards, some of that was quite interesting. I wrote it in my debrief yesterday. Albion went back three, and we didn't really expect them to, even when the team sheet dropped. So Yakushlu, in essence, was a third centre-half, the right-sided. And you could see that when he let the ball sail over his head and Vardy obviously won the penalty, something we haven't mentioned yet, the missed penalty, obviously. Which was strange because, what was Yakushlu doing in the Leicester box 2 minutes in to press and make that chance? But yeah, he was playing there. Carlos confirmed that to me afterwards. Obviously, Jan and Villa started alongside Mowat in midfield. I'd assumed when I saw the team sheet, it'd be a three-man midfield, sort of kind of similar to how we saw the Wolves FA Cup tie. But Maresca did say himself that when they saw that, they kind of remembered that's how Albion played against Wolves in the Cup. That's what Leicester remembered. So what I would say in terms of Albion's performance was that it was just a sharper tempo on it. They looked more energised to me. I think in a couple of examples, you could see players that had the breathers, be it in the Sunderland game or the Rotherham game before that. I think you saw a re-energised side. It looked to me like they were running that bit harder. I think the movement of the ball was that bit slicker, perhaps. I don't know whether it was just one of those, but in such a big occasion, playing at what Corbran thinks is the best side in the division, the side I probably still think are the best in the league, certainly the best squad in the division, and just Albion being right bang up for it, which I think bodes well. And I think maybe we've seen the justification of Corbran's sort of rotation and refreshing over the previous games. If that was the case, then I think it really worked. And there's some Corbran quotes, actually. I think we carried them Tuesday's Express and Star and online, where he effectively said, look, this 90 minutes against Leicester, very proud, very happy. Ditto with the first half against Sunderland, when we probably should remember that Albion were really good before Thomas Asante's red card. So he says, now look, for a game and a half where we've had 11v11, players have really responded to what I sort of asked from them a couple of weeks ago. So I think he was referencing, he potentially had a bit of a chat with his team, bit of a meeting, which he often does, but to say, look, now this is the time to bring it, you know. And he reckons for a game and a half now. Obviously, look, Sunderland was tough and largely poor with 10 men, but for a game and a half, they have bought it performance levels. And can that be maintained? You know, Sheffield Wednesday might be where they are on the table, but it's going to be no gimme, is it? Just because they're down there, and obviously Preston on the final day. Hopefully, those kind of intensity, desire, maybe performance levels can just stay up there towards that end of the scale. But it's hard to play that well every game, is it? You're not going to create 18, 20 shots every game. That just doesn't happen. But that's the frustrating part of football from a fan, isn't it? It's like, you know, how can you go from being able to do that to struggling to sort of create much/anything. I think we saw, and I remember saying this after Preston away all those months ago, I think we again saw a little glimmer of, you know, what a Corbran side can look like when they're, you know, playing at top gear, really. What he wants more often than not. And yeah, the player certainly delivered it all by the final touch, I guess, the other day. I mean, a quick word for Mikey Johnson. Among a Leicester group of Premier League players, he was the best and most dangerous player on the pitch. Unbelievable. Not just those early chances, many of which he made for himself. He made the one where Envia had it off the line. He was so good. He was so good. Probably his best Albion display, or certainly up there.
Yeah. In terms of Philip, I know we've already talked about a lot of positives, but a performance like that, I know we're not securing the playoffs yet, but we're almost there. if Albion play like that in the playoffs, I don't think we should be scared of anyone. We've got questions coming in, you know, is it better to finish fifth? Is it better to finish sixth? You know, do we want this team? Do we want that team? I think if Albion can go toe-to-toe and, you know, on the other day, it could be 5-1, the chances created on Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, I think that gives us encouragement to think we can take anyone on in the playoffs if, like we say, we secure it possibly this weekend.
Yeah, well, the intro to my match report, yeah, said, yeah, on an afternoon, Albion should have scored six. And I don't write that lightly. You know, that's just how I saw it and how it was. I think someone said this to me the other day, and I think there's a strong argument for it. I think Corbrand's Albion are better against better opposition. Someone asked a good question about, saw someone make a point about the Thomas Asante leading the line versus Jed Wallace leading the line. I think there's been a lot of strong displays with Wallace up top, like Saturday. I think playing the strong opposition really suits. You can only, Southampton have been the tougher opponent for Albion this season, haven't they? But even down there at St Mary's, Baggies were good and merited a point. Remember that day they had a case for a penalty decision go against them and really played well against Russell Martin's side. I know about the Russell Martin record against Albion, but that aside, now Albion have troubled and beat Leeds this season, troubled and beat Ipswich this season, lost to Leicester twice, yes, but in both cases shouldn't have lost, you know, last minute and obviously Saturday. So, yeah, I don't think any of those four I've mentioned, the top four, will really scare this Albion squad. I really don't. I mean, yes, I know Southampton sort of, it was a stroll in the park at the Hawthorns for them, wasn't it, in February, and that was a bit of an eye-opener. But let's remember Albion played well at St Mary's. Yes, I know, seemed to never get anything against a Russell Martin side. But, yeah, I do think you almost fancy a better performance against one of those four than, you know, a sort of mid to lower end of the table, which is odd, but there's probably something in that in terms of how they play, I would say.
Yeah, let's just have a look at what it does to the table. So we've got, you know, the top four are the top four now. We've got Albion played 44-72. Norwich now played 44-72. So they're neck and neck. Hull 43-66. Coventry 42-63. So we've got Hull, who are 6 points behind Albion. Coventry are seventh. Coventry got two games in hand. So it's still very much in Albion's favour.
They play each other on Wednesday night.
So what is the ideal result in that for West Brom, Coxie?
Well, I think I wrote this in our newsletter this morning, Tuesday morning. I think a draw, I think, because it just sees both lose ground, doesn't it? They're the only two teams now that can deny Albion. Look, we'll get on to fifth against sixth. That's another debate. But in terms of Hull and Cov, Middlesbrough in ninth can no longer catch Albion after their 4-3 defeat on Monday night to Leeds. So I don't know. At the minute, Hull have got more points by three, as you say, but Carver have got that extra game.
So if there's a draw on Wednesday evening and Albion win at Hillsborough on Saturday, that is that then? From
yeah,
the look of things.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, if it's a draw Wednesday evening, Hull trail by five, but can only get six. Coventry trail by eight, but can only get nine. So if it is a draw on Wednesday night, both would have to be perfect and Albion would have to lose two.
Yeah.
You know, so that's sort of unlikely territory, isn't it, if there is a draw on Wednesday night. If one of the teams on Wednesday night has to win, I'd probably rather it be Coventry. Well, it's a hard conversation, that, isn't it? Obviously, a Hull win puts them 3 points on Albion's coattails with two left. But if Coventry do it, then they're both 6 points behind. But, you know, Cov have two in hand, so Coventry are right there then, aren't they? With a decent goal difference, a better goal difference than Hull. Inferior to Albion's. But yeah, Coventry could put themselves right there by winning. They're at home, aren't they, Cov, I believe. I think I'm right in saying it's at the CBS. Yeah, Coventry at home. So they could put themselves right there to go. They would go above Hull. They would go 43 played on 66. Exactly the same as Hull's 43 played on 66. But Cov would still have that extra game and really have Albion and Norwich in their sights. So, look, obviously, Cov's situation is a little bit unique, isn't it? Coming off the back of United and the FA Cup at Wembley, but clearly their performance was excellent there, and they'll have a bit of momentum in terms of performance and want to take that feel-good factor, despite the penalty defeat, on. Might they be tired for Wednesday night? Well, quite possibly, yes. Bit of after the Lord Mayor's show, isn't it, that Albion can hope for? I think, yeah, I don't know what's... I guess a draw or a full victory is probably better, I guess. But it's quite hard to... You can make cases for all, really. But Cov's extra game gives them more to go at, I think. Gives them more to play for. So I'd kind of want to lean against Coventry, I think.
Yeah, we're all whole fans.
Well, Albion could just do their job on Saturday, can't they, regardless?
So. Exactly, mate, exactly. Time for just to chat for our sponsor, the Cat on Toaster Man, your graded product specialist over there on Thorns Road in Briley Hill. A huge mountain of unbelievable products, unbelievable brands at unbelievable price. And you know what? I'm just going to read off everything that he's got down there. You can get your hands on kitchen sets, kettles, toasters, microwave, kitchen bins, hair care, Coxie, for that beautiful hair of yours, large appliances, cookware, mixers and food processors. You get laundry stuff, air fryers, even stuff for mobility. You get floor care, catering, cooling. It's going to come towards the summer now. And heating, if you're looking forward to next year. They've got so many unbelievable products at unbelievable prices. We bring you those every single week. We always talk about air fryers, usually, don't we? But you're probably getting towards barbecue season now. But he has got some fantastic offers on air fryers. So head along to thecatlandtoasterman.co.uk or head to Thorns Road in Briley Hill if you want to have a snoop around his store. Right, Cox, I'm just going to move away a little bit. It's not wholly all the way from Albion. But I want to talk about FA Cup replays, because I know this is something that Carlos Corbrand spoke about last week in his, I think it was in his pre-match press conference. This is the news that the FA has decided to scrap FA Cup replays after the first round, because we all know that the reason why Man City lost in the Champions League the other day was because of Boreham Wood against, I don't know, Cambridge in the first round. Earlier this season, and I know you asked him about it on Friday, Coxie. So basically what has happened, the replay has been scrapped. The FA said it was in consultation with the EFL. The EFL has hit back, saying it was solely agreed between the Premier League and the FA. Strangely, the National League has now backed it, if you've been reading the news this week, although National League clubs benefit to the tune of tens, if not hundreds of thousands of pounds from replays. Carlos Corbrand said, "The only thing I can tell you is with one decision like that, what that one impacts a lot of competition like that competition." He said, "So from my perspective, the only thing I would like is the decision to be an agreement or consultation between every single part involved in the decision because of the impact. We played the replay with Chesterfield. They had a possibility to live an experience that without a replay, they wouldn't have lived. From the financial perspective, being at our stadium and playing this game, from the financial perspective, it may be that they use these experiences to win promotion to League Two. That's why it's important to make the right consultation with the right decision. It's a competition I respect a lot, being manager of West Bromwich Albion, even more because of our part of the history." And there were some comments as well. I know Ossol released a statement as well, condemning the decision. I was off last week when this all happened, but it's disgusting, if you ask me. It is absolutely disgusting. And what is more disgusting is the reaction from the Premier League managers. If you watch the Premier League managers' press conferences, you know, there was one just down the road. I'm not going to name the club either. And it was almost as if, tough, this is happening now. We're in charge of English football. We're playing more games in the Champions League. You know, suck it up. And we've talked about this before. English football is the best. We've got the best football structure in the world because of how big the structure is. You go down below La Liga, Serie A, you know, the Bundesliga, you go down to Division 3, it's not nowhere near as well supported or well liked as it is in this country.
Fairly professional, isn't it, really?
Yeah, if you go down that far, certainly if you went down to their non-league system. But I think it's a disgrace. It's an FA Cup replay, for God's sake. The FA... And the fact that the FA have come to this decision, it all boils down to money. Champions League games are worth more money to them than an FA Cup replay. But football is not all about them. And we talk about this independent regulator, and I think it's being debated in Parliament this week, I think, or it's coming, it's around the corner. it's a waste of time because all the power is going to remain at the top of the tree. And yes, all right, the TV money is paid to them clubs because they are the top of the product. But without the Football League and without the non-league structure, English football is not what it is. And I saw people making an argument the other day saying, I wish those six clubs would have left and set up the European Super League. And to be honest, kind of feel the same way, you know. And on the flip side of it as well, how many times have we seen Albion have done it? Albion play weaker teams, but the big boys play a lot of weak. Here's an example. You knew this, Coxie. Liverpool played Shrewsbury a few years ago. Jurgen Klopp was annoyed that his side had drawn at Shrewsbury.
Came in a mid-season break,
basically played the youth team and put the youth team manager in charge. Now, that's his decision. But what is also these clubs' decisions? You know, they treat the FA Cup like a fourth, fifth choice competition. That's fair enough. Don't go in it. I don't think there's an obligation for them to go in it. You know, I think it was in 2000 where there was a big furore because Man United didn't go in the FA Cup.
Yeah.
Because they were in the Super Cup or the World Club Cup or something like that when they won the treble. You know, don't go in it. You know, the FA Cup isn't about the big teams. I'm sorry, it's not. The FA Cup is about it's not even about West Brom. The FA Cup is about the smaller teams and the story. The best story this year in the FA Cup is Maidstone, for example. George Ellacobe's Maidstone, who took on all comers, you know, and almost got to the latter stages. But that's who the FA Cup is all about. It's not about the big... It used to be about the big teams, but it's not anymore because they treat it as a fifth choice competition.
It should be about everyone. The magnificent thing about it is that 700 odd teams enter it, don't they?
Yeah.
And some side that starts in the extra preliminary round can go all the way to Old Trafford. It's sad that I agree with everything you said. Really, that the saddest thing is it was in no way a surprise, was it? The news, that's sad. It's clearly been coming for some time, years and years, probably more than a decade. Competition's sort of reputation and sort of priority where it is and the priorities have just been dwindling, hasn't it? But that doesn't mean that authorities should, the FA and co should just sort of pander to the wishes of the big few. And Corban's point mainly was about consultation. He could see the not that he backed it, but he could see the point about the intensity and volume of games, not at the Premier League, but in the Championship, 46 games, and League One similar, and they have the trophy as well, Corbran was saying. But his point was about consultation. His point was about how has this happened and gone through without all of the EFL members' discussion, not to mention National League and below, all of those semi-pro sides. You know, this shouldn't have just been a consultation for the 20 clubs in the top flight. Why has that happened when 700 odd teams enter the competition? That's really seriously wrong, isn't it? Really seriously wrong. And I really hope there's something done about this. I don't think it will be, but I hope the clubs lower down who are really hurt, who are releasing those statements, act as strongly as they can about it.
Well, we've heard about this boycott, haven't we? And I hope it happens.
Yeah,
I hope West Brom are involved in it.
The problem is, if it happens, the clubs that boycott will probably be made an example of and fined, won't they? And sadly, those clubs probably can't afford to be fined. I mean, there's some examples, right? I think someone, used Lincoln as an example, who now in League One, a few years ago got to the quarters when they were a National League club, didn't they? And basically that run helped them build. And they shouldn't, not necessarily. I saw a lot of people saying, look, clubs shouldn't survive or have survival risked on an FA Cup replay. And I agree with that. I understand that case. They should be able to survive themselves anyway. But look, the carrot and prize for doing so well in the competition is being able to flourish. And
it's not even the finances with the Coxie. The FA have come out
memories,
and said clubs will be compensated. You look at those highlights reels at the start. You mentioned there that Corbyn talked about a congested fixture list. I get that. The reason this is coming in is because there's extra games in the Champions League. But we don't hear Pep Guardiola and we don't hear Jurgen Klopp. We don't hear Erik ten Hag going on about extra games in Europe. No, because it lines their pockets. And they won't whinge about going to Australia. I think, is it Spurs and Newcastle going to Australia three
days
after the end of the season?
That's an absolute
disgrace.
that there's what is it, a friendly five games after the end of the Prem season or something, on the other side of the world. That's the real, you know, and European competition's going to intensify.
I get that money comes into it, but if Tottenham and Spurs are Tottenham and Newcastle aren't making enough money from the Sky TV rights and everything else that surrounds football, that they have to go and play in Australia for the sake, and are still advocating for, to scrap an FA Cup replays. We might as well pick up a ball and go home, because
Play in Australia in July, but you know, don't moan about your players being injured, as Newcastle have all season, by the way.
Exactly.
And then do it a week after the end of the season. Let the players go on holiday. Like, honestly, one thing I keep forgetting to say, I think it was brought in to cancel replays in the first round and beyond, wasn't it? Maybe find a middle ground, and look, I'm not advocating scrapping replays at all, but maybe beyond the third round, beyond the fourth round. I get that no Prem club wants a replay. I probably get that no Champ club wants a replay. In their heart of hearts, would Corbrand rather not have a replay? Maybe. I'll put words in his mouth. He respects the FA Cup more than anything. But if he had the choice, you know, would he rather have his legs fresher for the Champ playoff running? Obviously. Maybe, look, the top boys coming in the third round, don't they? When more often than not, your Maidstones or whatever are still in. Give them a third round replay and then maybe cut it for the fourth. I know they've been cutting replays, haven't they, over the last few years, but to cut it from the first round, I mean, look, how many replays how many cup runs of Stourbridge down the road been on in the recent years, and how many stories, kiddie, other lowly clubs? In the first round, they could draw as the pyramid has allowed in recent years, Pompey, Sunderland, Bolton, these giants, and they could get a replay at Fratton Park or Stadium of Light or whatever. That should be able to happen in round one, round two, round three. All we want is to see Boreham Wood or Maidstone go and play at Old Trafford, don't we? That's all we're asking for. Like, it's not too much to ask for. Allow them in the third round, and just then, it's infuriating, isn't it? We should probably end this debate here, but I don't know. Hopefully something can be done, but I don't have much hope or optimism for the lesser clubs, inverted commas, being listened to. And it's a sad state of affairs, isn't it? But the very first thing I said in it is it wasn't a surprise. I don't think it is a surprise, and it's just sad. More nails in the coffin, I believe the phrase is, Johnny.
Yeah, certainly is. We'll move on to something else. Otherwise, I think I might combust. Questions from Albion fans. We got one here from Lee, or Bricktop81, as he's known on Twitter. Question for Lewis. In the time you've spent in Carlos's company during pre- and post-games, do you see him being tempted by a move away to a Premiership side? If we don't make it up this season, for instance, West Ham or Everton, should they or any other side come calling? That's for you, Coxie. So I will open the floor to yourself.
I'll caveat this by saying that I think Corbrand's highly ambitious, as most managers/head coaches are. I think every one of them wants to get into it to, or 99.9% of them get in there to manage as high as they can. However, the only impression I get from Corbrand in any context before or after any game is his commitment to Albion. I think he's done 18 months at the club of uncertainty and difficulty under an invisible owner, not able to do anything or not willing to do anything. Now, I think the club are facing a more prosperous time ahead. Yes, there's still choppy waters ahead. We know that with the finances, and Corbrand will know what the score is this summer with regards to what he has to do with the squad financially. Obviously different for what division they're in, but there's bright light moving forward for Albion, isn't there? Light at the end of the tunnel compared to what Corbrand's had to come from. And I think his reputation is burgeoning at Albion. I wrote yesterday, you might have saw it, Johnny, I wrote that I saw a lot of, with that Leicester game being on telly, I saw a lot of positive sort of national chat about Corbrand, a lot of football analytic so-called experts sort of cheering from the rooftops about the way Albion were playing, the job Corbrand's done to get them into fifth. I think Albion have gone under the radar to be where they are, to be honest. given that, you know, people on the outside might not understand the position the club were with Lye. But I think more and more realizing the job Corbyn's done. And yeah, managerial change all around, isn't there, this summer from the very top level all around. West Ham, I mentioned there, Everton, probably other Premier League examples, let's be honest. I mean, someone like Brentford, if a Thomas Frank gets a move, he's highly rated, isn't he? And he moves on, or if a Brighton's De Zerbi moves on, these sort of trendy, fashionable clubs at the moment, aren't they, Brighton and Brentford? And there's no reason that's where Albion want to be and what Albion want to get to, and they want to do it with Corbyn. But the only vibe I get from Albion's head coach is commitment to the job at Albion and passion for the job and the club and what the club have given him. And look, does it rest on the outcome of promotion? I wouldn't say that. However, I don't know that clubs won't come in for him. Obviously, he's contracted well, isn't he? Is it 27, I believe? And would take some approach, I'm sure, some official offer. But no, I think he has unwavering commitment to the club. I think he will see I think he'll see a brighter time ahead with Shilin Patel. I think he'll have a sense of loyalty and commitment to Albion because of maybe the opportunity they gave him. Yeah, after things didn't work out entirely well, short term stint at his previous club in Greece. And I'd like to imagine that regardless of what division Albion start in August, that Corbyn will be there building. I mean, let's be honest, he's still working with players he inherited 18 months ago. He's had three transfer windows, hasn't he, I think? Yeah, three. And been able to do next to nothing. Yes, a couple of frees and loans, but next to nothing. So realistically, from the summer, and yes, it won't be by making signings, by spending money, but with the volume of sort of players we expect to leave, clearly he'll have to work to bring in bodies to replace them. So you can make a case that from the summer, from next season, it'll be Corbyn's first true squad he's built and bought and put together. See a bit more of his identity as a head coach. So I think he'll be looking forward to all of that. It's a big, maybe not clean slate, it's a big line in the sand for Albion's squad this summer, isn't it? For an ageing Albion squad. Writing a piece at some point this week about Albion having the oldest average age in the Championship. And I asked Carlos about that last week, and he sort of wasn't too moved by it, really. But I don't think any manager wants the oldest average age in the division. I don't think you do. I don't think you want the youngest either. I think you want a healthy middle ground. And that can all change come the summer. And yeah, to answer to the bottom line to the question, I don't see anything. I haven't seen or heard anything that's made me unsure about Carlos's connection with Albion, really.
Dan Tudge has got in touch with two questions. He's put, if you're any of the soon to be relegated Premier League teams, who would you take from Albion? And he's put, including Carlos Corbyn. So the teams are going to come, that you're looking at the likes of Luton, Sheffield United, who else is down there? Everton, Burnley, Forest, all ones struggling. If say they wanted to pick off some Albion players, if Albion didn't go up, who would they be looking at, Coxon?
Fellows. Potentially Alex Palmer, I would say. Perhaps Kipre.
I'm going to say, have a look at the threes.
Yeah, I mean, that assist the other day, not just wanting to highlight one moment, but that shows us something to his game that, you know, might not have automatically assumed the fact, you know, sort of confidence on the ball. And eye for a pass of a midfielder, realistically, or of an attacker. So those three stand out to me. Fellows, obviously, because of the kind of homegrown profile, I suppose, and the age profile and Palmer's performance levels. Obviously, Palmer's garnered top flight interest before, hasn't he? Fellows, conversation to be had around Josh Griffiths, maybe. He's attracted Premier League interest before, hasn't he? Josh Griffiths, the young backup goalkeeper. Beyond that, I'm not so sure for now, but there's sort of 3/4 names off the top of my head that I think could.
Yeah. Dan also asked, he said, can I sneak a couple in? Any news on season ticket release dates and prices for next season? I'm guessing, Coxie, that's probably on hold a little bit. owing to what division Albion are going to be in next
year. Well, yeah. No, it's nothing that I've heard either way about. I don't know for definite that that's on hold until things are decided in terms of the league. That could be the case, and I'm sure Albion have it planned out either way. I'm sure. Albion ticket prices have been incredible for recent years, haven't they? Best around locally, certainly, and great value relative to others in the champ. Hopefully they remain in a good place. The club will have to, you know, they will have been working it out, obviously, with the new ownership. What's viable? What if there's a change? What change is that going to be? And if it's an increase, what's that going to be? And how can it help other parts of the club? Look, if it is an increase, it's still a difficult time. We saw the recent accounts, didn't we? We know the challenging year ahead regards the next accounts. If the club have to do something, then they might have to. I don't know that. I'm just surmising. But I think supporters will hopefully, by and large, understand that and understand that this is not, fans are not being put through this for the sake of it, or it's a means to an end, and while the club stabilises before it can flourish under Shill and Patel, hopefully. But yeah, as you say, it could be a world where we're talking about Premier League tickets next season, and obviously I haven't previously covered Albion in the top flight, but I guess that brings on to a different conversation in terms of slightly different brackets. But I suppose in the next couple of weeks, really, we'll hopefully see some clarity on that regard.
The next one is, after the great atmosphere on Saturday, this is from Dan as well, could we please start an ultras group? And as soon as I read the bit ultras group, I just thought of like an Eastern European teams. Can you see?
Like marching down the Brummie Road.
Yeah, like Greece and Turkey.
Megaphones.
Can't quite see that coming off at the Hawthorns.
We've discussed it in recent weeks, didn't we, just briefly about either a standing or a singing section. I know that's been a topic of convo for supporters, hasn't it? I know we've aired our thoughts about that recently, but I don't know. I mean, there are parts of the ground that like to be the louder, more vocal sort of singing parts anyway, aren't there? So I don't know. It's hard to believe that kind of atmosphere in a 3,000 strong away and can be replicated for your bang average games every week. I don't know as it can. But in an ideal world, it can, and something can be done. But no, we'll have to see. You know, when we get to ask the relevant people, perhaps that's something the club could look at.
Right, we've also got another Baggies fan, Baggies 879, who's asked three separate questions as well. So between him and Dan, they're keeping us going today. They've said, what's happened to the lesser spotted Pippa? He hasn't made an appearance in a matchday squad for many months. I've not heard of any injury or news that he has been sent back to his owning club. I think it's just a case of the options, isn't it, Coxie? Just, he can't get a game, we say.
No. He played in the 21s, didn't he? Was it the Man City away game that Madger played in? I think I'm right in saying. He certainly had an outing for the under-21s. Pippa was struggling for a game, wasn't he? Pippa was struggling for a start when Albion was struggling for numbers. So now they're not so struggling for numbers and most players are back. He's out of the picture, hasn't he? He's been out of the 20-man squad picture. Now, Carlos Corbin has been asked about him over the last, I don't know, 6 weeks, couple of months. Nothing but praise, really, in terms of him as a player, him as a person. But, yeah, I think we've seen, what was it, probably 6 weeks since, 4 weeks, 6 weeks since Adam Reach has come back around it. Choosing him as an example, but Reach, someone who can play left back, midfield, wing, he seems to be the one selected for it, doesn't it? We haven't seen Eric Peters around it, really. And yes, Peters has done wonderfully this season when required, but Reach just seems to have the nod. And there's a little nod to how high Corbyn rates someone like Reach, who's obviously out of contract. But look, Pippa was brought in as a right back, wasn't he? And I think he's a talent. I've liked to bits of what I've seen from him, but he wasn't able to dislodge Furlong, was he? Furlong's had a good season, I think, by and large, and Pippa's been unable to get in, and now isn't able to make the cut for the squad. I mean, injuries would change that, but touch wood at this stage of the season, Albion get no more. And yeah, it's just been one of those loans where I don't know. Pippa obviously hasn't been able to quite get to the level where Corbrand's selecting him as a starter. And that's how some loans go, I suppose, isn't it? I mean, look, we probably haven't discussed the Callum Marshall on the podcast, have we? Going back to West Ham. Yeah, I don't think Marshall coming to Albion was ever in line to be a starter, really. Probably off the bench if he had to be. Obviously, Magic coming back is an extra striking option, isn't he? Other wingers coming back. Wallace plays up front. Phillips could probably play up front. Dean Garner. So, yeah, I guess Marshall, a young player on his first loan, should really never have expected regular game time at a big champ club looking for promotion, and had the experience of being in and around a squad and training. But I think when we saw Marshall get off the bench for brief cameos early into his loan, we saw a raw player there with energy and the right attitude, but maybe a long way off being ready to be involved at this level, you know, a loan or two off being ready. And Corbrand was asked about Marshall last week, actually, and spoke about a player who's going to have a massive career. And you know, his goal record at youth level suggests that. But yeah, maybe just wasn't ready for this loan.
Two more from Baggy 79. Do you expect Griffiths and Fellows to be sold in the summer if we stay down? If so, how much do you value them at? It makes business sense. It makes business sense, like selling O'Shea last season, the finances enable CT to mould his squad. We'll just skip over that first bit because we've said those two, you know, clubs could look at them if Albion don't go up this summer. What would you value them at? Griffiths, I'm unsure of, but I would say at the moment you could probably command 8 to 10 million for Fellows at least in the current market,
at least,
given
I
the
would
fact
say
that where
least.
He is and the fact that he's English. So that puts a premium on players.
Yeah.
If you looked back over all the transfers of English players or English born players and nurtured players in the last 5 to 10 years,
I don't think the club would have any intention of selling Fellows, ideally. I don't. I mean, I realise finances dictate, but I think he's a player Albion should look to build the team and squad around, really. And I imagine Corbyn would want to do that. However, look, it depends who comes in with what, doesn't it? Let's be honest. It's probably a different conversation for the divisions Albion finishing. And if and how much interest there is in Fellows. I think Griffiths as a substitute keeper and a young, highly rated keeper is an entirely different conversation. And Albion looking to raise money by moving players on if they have to, and players that more ideally rather move on than others. And look, I think Griffiths could have a big career, a big future somewhere. It could be at Albion, couldn't it? It could be at Albion. Alex Palmer very nearly left. And yes, a keeper would have come in on loan probably to contend to that number one, but it could have been Griffiths if that loan keeper didn't work or whatever. So I don't personally, I really struggle personally to see a world where Palmer and Griffiths are Albion's two keepers next season. But again, there has to be that interest out there for Griffiths, I suppose, and sufficient approaches. But yeah, it's hard to value them, isn't it, really? I mean, Fellows, you can take a bit of a punt because he's playing every week, but how do you put a value on it? Josh Griffiths, a young goalkeeper who's been on the bench every week, it's quite hard to say, isn't it?
Yeah. Final question from Baggage 1879. It's getting his money's worth this week. Thoughts on the rearranged playoff kickoff times? Do you think it will have an effect on atmosphere playing Sunday lunchtime instead of Monday under the lights? Will that affect our players in any way? This is the news, if you haven't seen it this morning, that the first leg of the playoffs were due to take place on a Sunday, one on a Monday. They're both on a Sunday now due to the fact that Villa are playing Liverpool on a Monday. So that game would have clashed with Albion, or will clash with Albion, if Albion do get into the playoffs. I've seen a lot of people talking about this. I think it makes not one jot of difference, to be honest. I think the atmosphere will be as rocking on a Sunday lunchtime as it would be on a Monday night. It's a playoff game. You know, me and Coxie talked about it off air. You only have to go back to the Black Country Derby to see how much of an atmosphere you can get inside the Hawthorns on a Sunday afternoon. So I don't think it makes a difference because it's not your normal league game, bog standard league game. It's a playoff game, and I think it'll be as rocking as ever.
Yeah, that's I can see why some supporters have the idea of a night game, even though it's a week night game, as better because you can sort of look forward to it all day. You can get in a pub after work or whatever, more time to prepare for it. And there's an idea, isn't there, that Sunday is a sleepy day, whenever there's a Sunday game, it's a bit subdued. But yeah, Johnny makes a good point. The Wolves game, I mean, was probably the opposite to subdued, wasn't it? And that was a Sunday. So yeah, I don't think it makes that much difference, to be honest. It's I suppose from an Albion fan's perspective, it's a little bit irritating that it's been moved on because of neighbours playing down the road. But yeah, that's obviously the case. So yeah, I don't think it makes that much difference, personally. I don't. And actually, it goes from being the Monday Friday semi-finals to the Sunday to now Sunday Friday. So yeah, you know, I don't think Carlos will mind too much that extra day's recovery and preparation for the second leg.
And then final one from Tom Hunt. Simple question: do you think we will finish fifth or sixth, or is it better to finish fifth or sixth? My answer would be C, answer to previous question. For me, it doesn't make a difference. Like we said at the top of the conversation, if Albion could perform like it did against Leicester, against anyone else in that playoffs,
yeah,
I think they'll come out on top. So
I don't disagree with that, and I'd kind of agreed with that all the way through, really. But I think just over this weekend, with Norwich obviously level with Albion now, there's a very real conversation to be had about fifth or sixth. I can't decide for the final games who's going to finish where. It's impossible to call, isn't it? Albion could go to Hillsborough and win on Saturday. They could lose. Yeah, we don't know. However, when you look at the opposition, I think fifth plays Southampton, don't they? I think it's highly unlikely Southampton climb up. They've got games in hand, admittedly, but they lost the other day, didn't they? And Southampton finishing above fourth would be a surprise. And yeah, we said all we said at the top about, you know, playing well at St Mary's, blah, 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 blah. But I think finishing sixth and playing against third, I think Southampton can get in their head now that they're more than likely in the playoffs. I think playing against third will be hurt, won't they, for missing the top two. Whoever it is, Leeds, Ipswich, they'll be hurt. And if it's Ipswich, they'll be really hurt because they've kind of had top two in their grasp all season. So that, you know, they might be a bit low on morale having to go into the playoffs. It could work the other way. They could be motivated to go and get what was theirs, finishing third. But I do think there's a case for finishing sixth and playing. There's probably a debate and argument for playing the side that just feels a little bit hard done to for missing out on the top two. There's probably something there, but I don't know. I can see why many listening, I'm sure, would agree as they're listening now, would say, yeah, do you know what? I wouldn't mind sixth over fifth.
Yeah.
But I don't expect to get an answer from Carlos Corbran on that.
You certainly won't. Bags fans, thanks for your questions. Just before we wrap up, we head to Hillsborough on Saturday. Coxie, my sort of finishing point is if they perform like they did at the King Power on Saturday, then they should be absolutely fine and we will be celebrating a playoff spot. But the challenge is doing that. I think it's going to be similar in terms of atmosphere. A full ground, Hillsborough will be rocking. Sheffield Wednesday are going for survival. Albion just needs to turn up. If Albion turn up and turn it on, they'll win Saturday.
I haven't seen any pictures or videos of late, but when I did see images of the Hillsborough pitch a couple of months ago, it was not in a good way. And I think that might suit the hosts because they're used to it and it's far from a carpet, should we say. But you're right to point about the atmosphere there. I think Sheffield Wednesday got a big win on Sunday, didn't they, over Blackburn? And that really boosted them in terms of the table, lifted them out of the bottom three, didn't they? I mean, Pennyfield thought of Blues third bottom. So I think the point I was going to make is if Sheffield Wednesday didn't have that Blackburn win, I think there'd be a bit more on this Hillsborough finale for them. I think, yeah, they'd sort of have to win it or at least draw it to have a chance of getting out of it. I think because they got that vital 3 points over Blackburn, I think maybe there's a little bit less on it because they've already got a big win and they're sort of, don't get me wrong, they need to get something against Albion, I'm sure, but that crucial win against Blackburn, is their foot going to be a couple of inches more off the gas because of it? But maybe. Probably more on it for Sheffield Wednesday than there is for Albion, as bad as that is to say, but no, to be honest, no. Albion need that final win, don't they? They don't want to crawl over the line. But they've lost two in a row now. Only won one in six since the international break. Draw at Hillsborough on Saturday. Maybe not the worst result in the world, but that becomes one win in seven. Starts to not really read as well, does it, for momentum and form. So, yeah, play as they did on Saturday, and they'll get the win, or they should get the win, as long as they can remember how to put the ball in the net. I tend to go along with what Corbrand said after Leicester, in that his side have found something now, despite these defeats. In a game and a half, they've found a performance level, and hopefully they can get up to near it again.
Hopefully they can, pal. Hopefully they can. Baggies fans, thank you very much for listening. Appreciate your time, as always. We're edging ever close to the end of the season. I just want to bring you a podcast where we can celebrate being in the playoffs. We can just have a big sigh of relief. Hopefully we can do that next week. I'll be alongside Coxie at Hillsborough on Saturday, looking after him after his week on his own. But we'll be back. We'll hopefully be bringing you some good news. So until then, from me and Coxie, thanks for listening. Until next time, boing, boing.
Boing, boing.